Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Matanda Das, who is the president of Fifth Dimension Logistics. Matanda, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's set a little context for our conversation, which is about the big, broad world of credit card processing, all of the issues associated with that, and your role within that place in the ecosystem. So tell us, in your words, Fifth Dimension Logistics. You've been in the business for a while, the business being credit card processing. You've acquired recently another company, which is a merchant account services business, and you have rebranded. You're now Sparrow. So tell us the reason behind the rebrand and what you hope to achieve with the acquisition.
Sure. So Fifth Dimension Logistics, at its core, is a payment software company. So we have we're a payment gateway and a transaction hub. The acquisition of Superior for us was really about giving us an opportunity to grow our merchant base and expand our products and services offering to really provide a more seamless service to our customers and a higher level of customer service. You know, as we kind of joke around here now with the acquisition, there's really only one throat to choke when there's a problem, because we're handling both sides of the transaction, not only the payment transaction services, but also the merchant account services for a lot of our clients.
That seems to be a trend in the business, as I guess the merchant needs become more complicated. There are more things for them to consider, more options for them to be pursuing. That seems to be a trend. What specifically do you do that makes you unique?
So the uniqueness for us is probably, there are a couple different ways to look at it. The first is with our payment software. We don't just do a simple transaction. If you look at our competitors in the payment gateway world, it's really about processing a transaction, collecting whatever dollars and cents you can for that service, and then kind of getting out of the way. We don't look at it that way at all. For us, a transaction, when processed and complete, is really just the beginning of a whole chain of events that will happen in the supply chain. And so on the back end of our payment gateway, we have a transaction hub. It's cloud-based, PCI compliant, level one, secure, all the good words you'd want to hear when talking about moving data. But that Echo data exchange on the back end of our payment gateway is really a differentiator for us and what clients are really finding quite useful. So what happens in our world when a transaction is processed, the transaction is complete, but you still have to send data over to your replenishment system, fulfillment, sales audit, and accounting. And those things need to happen in real time in a secure fashion. So with the Echo Data Exchange, we're not just going to stop at processing a transaction. We're going to help you synchronize your supply chain, which makes you more efficient from an operational perspective. But then also, if you drive down into the cost savings of this type of business model or cloud integration, what you're looking at is reducing the number of point-to-point integrations around the IT supply chain at the merchant. And so, you know, it used to be where you'd have all these big enterprise systems connected together, and anytime you changed the integration between one or two of them, there would be a ripple effect. Through centralization, you can get rid of that ripple effect problem, and you can more easily adopt best-of-breed solutions. The other good fallout from that is then it's easier to achieve compliance. When you centralize the sensitive data, the personal account numbers and things like that, when you centralize that and house it in a secure location, you can pass tokens back and forth that will represent, say, a social security number, an ACH number, and so on. And in that way, now you don't have to have sensitive data out there in the hands of everybody in your organization who's ever involved with handling a payment or touching a customer.
So what kinds of merchants do you typically serve?
Well, that's evolving. You know, the Department of Defense Armed Forces Exchange was our first customer. And so we started in the narrow scope of what can we do for the military and online processing for their private label card. We expanded then into the travel space. And we process now for lots of travel and vacation companies. By the way, we only hired salespeople a year ago. So for the decade that we've been in business, the first 8 years, it was all organic growth and it was word of mouth. And so from there, we traversed into soft lines retail. So we have soft lines retail customers in Canada, and we have pizza stores in the West Coast. And so now we pretty much go across all verticals. We're really finding a lot of sales acceleration in the education space right now and in medical and orthodontics. And that's because of some specific products that we have that address needs that they have within their businesses.
So what kinds of things are you hearing from your merchants with respect to their key priorities? You know, so much of what we talk about now with merchant focus is mobile and customer engagement, of course, security and EMV, Apple Pay, different kinds of payment methods. But what are the things that are bubbling to the top with respect to the merchants you work with?
So I think there are two that you touched on that we hear the most here. And the first is payment security, big issue in the minds of all of our larger, call it tier two and tier one clients. So that's, you know, $100 million and above. The smaller merchants, I don't know that they get it yet. Mm-hmm. And so that there's lots of reasons for that. It might be budgetary constraints. It might be, you know, it's not going to happen to me, not having the technical staff to address those issues. So security is a big one. And the second one is omnichannel. And omnichannel, kind of at a broad sense, not only is that just being able to open up more ways to interact with the customer and sell, but it's also, as you pointed out, getting in touch with those customers and being where they are at the time of sale to better perform their job as merchants in facilitating the sale and what the customer's needs are.
Yeah, it is interesting. I've been following some of the survey data that's coming out now as we get closer to the liability shift date of October 2015, how many merchants are completely unaware of, you know, the requirement around EMV. Now, whether they're unaware of it or whether they've sort of filed it away, not really focused on it, is irrelevant. But what are you doing for those merchants? Are you trying to help them become compliant? Are you offering them other services that help them mitigate their risk of security as they then pursue EMV certification at some other point in time?
Yeah, we're offering them services and consultation. You know, the hard part is walking into someone's business and saying, hey, you're doing this wrong. And so it's a delicate line for us to cross. And so it really comes down to fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And so the fear of having our customers and our systems exposed gives us a point at which we can approach the customer and say, you know, you're doing things in a non-compliant fashion and you're kind of putting us all at risk. And so that's kind of a delicate way to go in there and say, you know, I really need to make sure that you're doing it right so that we're doing it right and let me help you. You know, the uncertainty side is a lot of them just don't know what to do and where to start, because security for a lot of merchants is such a big ominous thing. You look at Target and they think of, oh my goodness, look how big that thing is, and it's a big ugly cloud, and how could we ever deal with such an issue? And sometimes they forget that or don't know that their issue isn't that big. You know, you've got three or four terminals in a dry cleaner. It's a totally different problem than what Target saw at a macro level. And so that's the uncertainty side of it. And the doubt is, for a lot of them, is, you know, they doubt that it's going to happen to them. And so, you know, we kind of have to sell in that fashion and say, you know, nobody's immune. Look at the statistics. They're growing and growing. And with that, then what we try to do is convey to them, there's two ways to spend your money. One is playing offense and one is playing defense. And if you get on the offensive side of this, then you have a better chance to win. If you get on the defensive side of this and you're trying to glue your company back together after you've lost data, you've lost customers, you've destroyed trust, then, you know, you're digging out of a hole. And so it's way better to play offense than defense. And that's the approach we're taking with our customers. You know, we call them every day and send them email and letters and try to get them to understand all of those things.
It's tough, especially when you're talking to a small, medium-sized merchant that's very busy, they're resource constrained, their business is about selling whatever it is they're in the business to sell, and all of this is just, you know, to them certainly important, but it's that administrative stuff that you worry about after, you know, office hours or store hours or whatever. And it, I think it's very, very difficult for them to understand the importance. I was shocked at a statistic that I read, though, that in the average case of a breach, that the perpetrator has actually been in the system for something like 209 days. So, you know, that's staggering to me to think that they go undetected for such a long period of time, you know, as they figure out the best way to extract what it is they need to get.
For a lot of merchants, they're focused on their business. And for us, we're focused on security, because if we give that up, then we might as well just close the doors. And so we have like layer after layer of security that includes intrusion detection systems and exterior web application firewalls, internal application firewalls, and these things called DMZs and all these cool buzzwords. But what it amounts to is like 9 or 10 levels of security. For merchants, you know, they think, well, 1 or 2 levels should be enough, because all of the products that are out there in the market, that's what they claim, right? You know, we're the best intrusion detection system in the world. And they go, great, let's get that system. And they fire it up and things are going along fine. Well, the problem is the intrusion detection system only can see one aspect of the business or of the systems. And so they may be getting a false sense of security by adopting 1 or 2 security measures that, when you look at it as a whole, provides some very good front-facing security, but it's not doing enough on the backside. And the big wild card there seems to be always humans. We make mistakes. Sometimes there are people who have nefarious intents. And so there are a lot of balls in the air that need to be juggled as you try to figure out your security plan and roadmap going forward of how to protect your customers and your own data.
You know, we talked at the beginning of our conversation about how the space has changed over the last decade and is certainly evolving and will continue to evolve over the next several years. I'd be curious to get your perspective on the biggest changes that you've observed over the last decade of being in the merchant services business, and how you believe that you're positioned going forward to continue to innovate and stay a step ahead.
The pace of business is increasing, right? As, mm-hmm. as information flows, as we've enabled more and more people to transact on their PC, on their tablet, and on their phone, the pace of sales and business in general is in constant acceleration. And so that's a huge shift from, you know, 20 years ago when I was a programmer at a retail software company where we had big monolithic systems and we did batch processing at night and that was good enough. And now it's, everything is real time. And, you know, even the term just in time has kind of gone by the wayside. Back in the year 2000 and so on, we were talking about doing just in time inventory replenishment. Just in time isn't even good enough anymore. Uh-huh. And so now it's real time. It's right now. And that's the biggest shift. And for us, you know, to be able to handle that, we've got to be able to be there every time, on time, and even ahead of time. And the way that we do that is through our software applications that are now not just on a PC. You know, we don't even sell PC-based software anymore. We're all internet-based. We're cloud-based. We have mobile applications for both iPhone and Android. And so we're in your hand everywhere you go from an executive perspective. And even now in client-facing situations, we have applications that are being carried around in major department stores today, selling, say, vacation packages, and that's right there at the time of sale, and we're right in the middle of that. And so we're able to help our clients in that way. And then the second thing is this whole credit card thing is just really messy. And for a long time, it's been the elephant in the room that nobody wanted to talk to or try to move because they don't understand it. And so for us, transparency is huge. When we talk to our merchants or prospects, it's all about, let's peel back all these layers. Let's expose the truth about what you're paying and what you're not paying. And then even better than that, and our systems will do this next thing automatically, even better than that, how can we change behaviors and data to optimize cash flow for that merchant? And so if they're delayed in doing settlement and things like that, you know, that's going to cost them in terms of their credit card processing fees and interchange rate. Let's help them correct that behavior. So we have a whole list or a whole triage that we go through with merchants in terms of how are we going to help you learn more about your business first? And then secondly, how are we going to mitigate costs and increase your cash flow so that they can stay on top of being really good merchants and retailers instead of being really good at, you know, trying to account for all the nickels that are flying out the window.
That's really interesting, and I'm sure very valuable for the clients that you serve. What other things can we expect to see on Sparrow's roadmap over the next several months? What does 2015 look like for you guys?
So, yeah, the combination of or the amalgamation of the two companies, our software company with now this merchant services entity, yes, we are rebranding and we are called Sparrow. And so Sparrow is representative of what we are and what we intend to be going forward. If you were to Google imagery for Sparrow, you would find things like productive and trustworthy and ever vigilant. And so that's really what we are, is we're trying to be trustworthy through transparency. We're trying to be ever vigilant in terms of security and trying to stay proactive on top of that. And then going forward, what you're going to see from us is greater expansion in the omnichannel world and certainly in global payments. We continue to adopt additional processing and acquiring relationships outside of the U.S. to enable that multi-currency and cross-border selling for our merchants, and that helps them grow their business. And then at the same time, we're growing our software to address the ongoing needs of our merchants. And, you know, to be honest with you, they're the greatest driver of new product development within our company. You know, be it they need more advanced fraud protection rules. And so we've updated that system to give them a better grasp of what are the fraud patterns that they're experiencing and how can they mitigate those. They want to know more about their customers. And so we've built an entire customer scoring system that allows them to evaluate their customers based on recency and frequency of purchase, refunds and disputes. And so now they can evaluate a customer at the time of transaction and decide, is this a good transaction for us or not? And, or even just put a limit on it and say, you know, this guy's been a little problematic in the past. We shouldn't be extending, say, credit on a layaway program, or maybe even just limiting the transaction, say, you can't spend over $100 unless you have some sort of conversation with that person to ensure that there's not going to be a chargeback or some dispute later.
Wow, that all sounds really interesting and certainly the kind of thing that brings a lot of value to merchants and helps them maximize the efficiency of their business and their capital. Matanda, it was really great to get to know your business and your thoughts about the space and your plans for the future. Thanks for joining me today.
Great. Thank you very much.